I have to admit, I was sitting there thinking somebody needs to pray for this plant up here. It's going to need to be resurrected here pretty soon. It's in rough shape. So I was sitting there going, oh, that poor thing. So I thought all these plants were fake. I just realized apparently that one's not. So I was reading a book recently. The author shared a story. I don't often have a lot of stories in the beginning of the sermon, but I thought this one was rather fitting. It appeared in a magazine titled Decision in January of 1990. The author was Charles W. Price. I don't know if that's significant or not, but if you want to try to look it up. It's a good illustration of what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about our foundations and our priorities. The story is about a tall building which developed a crack on the 42nd floor. The manager of the building called an architect to investigate. Now, having some background in building, development stuff, having gone to school to be an architect at one point, probably needed a structural engineer, but the story says it was an architect. When the architect arrived, the receptionist notified the manager, who took the elevator to the 42nd floor in order to meet the expert. And when he arrived, the architect was not there. A search of the building found that he was, in fact, in the basement. The manager now, at this point, is pretty steamed, having gone all the way up to the 42nd floor and only to go back now to the basement to find this guy. And so when he confronted the architect, he said, "What are you doing down here? You know, we have this serious crack developing on the 42nd floor. That's what needs your immediate attention." The architect replied, "Sir, you may have a crack on the 42nd floor, but your problem's not on the 42nd floor. Your problem is here in the basement." It would turn out, after a further investigation, it uncovered the source of the problem. It was that of a security guard who was employed in the building, wanted to build a garage onto his house, but he was short of both materials and money. You see where this is going, right? Every day after work, he chiseled a brick out of the wall in the basement, smuggled it out of the building in his lunch pail. After 5 or 6 years of this activity, a crack appeared on the 42nd floor. Now, I look at this as a story of perseverance, right? This guy, 5 or 6 years sneaking a brick out? It's actually talking about foundations. Jesus illustrated this principle about the importance of foundations in Luke chapter 6, if you'd like to join me there. Luke chapter 6, and beginning in verse 46. This is a well-known parable. It's much of what I'm going to cover today. This sermon is foundational. What did I mean by that? There's nothing new here today. But I think it's relevant that we review what we're going to review today. Luke chapter 6 and verse 46. "But why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do the things which I say?" Verse 47, "Whoever comes to me and hears my sayings and does them, I'll show you whom he's like." So here's the condition. This is someone hears what I say and does what I say. "They are likened unto," verse 48, "a man building a house who dug deep and laid the foundation on the rock. And when the flood arose, a steam beat vehemently against the house and could not shake it, for it was founded on the rock." Dig deep is what he said. This is a man who would dig deep. That's a principle that still exists today. I was curious. I looked up the tallest building in the world today is the Burj Khalifa in Dubai. It's very famous. Actually, right now, Saudi Arabia is trying to build one even taller. But currently, the Burj Khalifa is the tallest building. It's 2,720 feet tall. That's just over a half a mile, if you can get your mind around that. That's a half a mile up. I ain't going. I've been around a lot of architects and engineers in my life, and I don't know if I want to go that high up in a building. Its foundation, though, interestingly enough, it's a 12-foot thick raft or a platform. It's not square. It actually branches out this way, but it's 12 feet thick. Think of a 12-foot thick piece of concrete. It's about 300 feet by 300 feet in size. It has 192 5-foot diameter pylons buried 165 feet down. All of that necessary to support a building that's going a half a mile up in the sky. Foundations are really important. As the story I read from the book I was just reading illustrates, the foundation of your house starts to crumble, you got some serious problems. You just do. And it's not something you can ignore. But yet, foundations aren't always a thing we examine, right? We look at the outside of the house, make sure it's painted well, and everything matches, and it looks pretty. But foundations aren't something we often spend a lot of time on. If you don't, though, you're eventually going to have problems. Notice verse 49, but he who heard and did nothing is like a man who built a house on the earth without a foundation, against which the stream beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great. The principle of this short parable here is that those that hear and do survive storms. Those that hear and do nothing leads to our own destruction. In light of the challenges we've all been dealing with this past year, I thought it would be good for us to get ourselves in the proper frame of mind before the fall holy days. Next Sabbath is the first of the fall holy days, the Feast of Trumpets. And as I alluded to in the announcements, I've had my share of conversations this week to the point where I'm kind of up to here with it. I'm just being honest, right? And I thought it'd be good for us to just have it out here, right? Just let's talk and be ready for the fall holy days. And let's make sure that we're ready. Let's review our foundation. Why are we keeping the holy days? Why are we going? What is its purpose? What is its intent? What does God expect of us? You know, all of God's holy days are important meetings that are established by God. I don't call them. You don't call them. Home office doesn't call us. God ordained those. He established those. He calls those appointed times. How and why you and I prepare for them sends a powerful message to God. How and why we prepare does that. Unfortunately, we live in a time today, certainly in the world at large, and to be quite candid, even a small amount of the church, it's a small amount, right? We just have this idea they can do what they want, when they want, how they want. They don't really care what anybody says. I'm going to do it my way. And so it creates, at times, challenges for individuals who are planning things. I disagree, of course, with that point of view. God is not the author of confusion. He wants his people to work together and come together and work through challenges together. That's what God wants of his people. Now, of course, it takes each and every one of us individually doing our part in order for that to happen. So what have you done to prepare yourself for the upcoming fall holy days? What have you done to prepare for them? Because again, if showing up next week is all that you've prepared for, then you're really missing the whole point. And when I say we, understand me too. It applies to me. I'm not just directing it at you, but for all of us. What have we done to prepare? Because if you're just showing up, then that means you're attending the feast. You're attending the holy day. Right? Is there more to it than that? Have you prepared yourself? Physically, right? We've saved our second tithe to go to the Feast of Tabernacles, and I'll get to that in a little bit. That's part of physical preparation. Are we maintaining our health and being prepared physically so that we're able to go certainly the Trumpets, Atonement, but certainly the Feast of Tabernacles? How about spiritually? Have you prayed about it and fasted, meditated, and got ready and to really go and to glean from each of the holy days the messages that are being prepared for us to glean from? And this will be the touchy point. How about emotionally? How's your attitude? Are we in the right frame of mind to go to the holy days? Next week will be a good trial run of that, right? Because we're going to have a lot of people here, a lot more than we do on the regular Sabbath. And, you know, we're going to follow certain rules and guidelines. It'll be a good trial run for what we're going to see at the feast, right? And so, again, it'll be a good way for us to see, you know, how is my attitude? You know, how am I handling these things? And so today I want to ask the question, are we really ready for the fall holy days? The title is, Are You Ready for the Fall Holy Days? That's really where I want to go. And we can each, as we go through this today, ask ourselves individually, am I ready? Truly ready for the holy days? You know, it's interesting, you know, about the fall holy days. You know, we're going to observe 10 days in 1 month. Now, we don't often see that because the Hebrew calendar doesn't coincide with our calendar. But, you'll see as we get to those later on here that all of them are in the same month, the seventh month. 10 holy days, a third of that month, 10 out of 30 days out of 1 month is set aside as God's commanded. Let's begin in Leviticus 23 with an overview of God's intent for his holy days. Now, I'm not going to get into the specific meaning of each day. We will do that as the days come around. We typically cover those things. But let's begin Leviticus 23. And we're going to begin in verse 1 and 2. Leviticus 23, verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, verse 2, and say to them, the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts. And so the first thing we note here is the word feast. And we have looked at this. I gave a sermon covering some of these points about 5 years ago. I had to go back and look. I can't believe it's been 5 years already. But if some of this sounds familiar, then that means you got a memory that goes back 5 years, right? There may have been other men who've spoken in between. Feast, it's moad, and it means an appointment, a fixed time. It's an assembly convened for a definite purpose. An assembly convened for a definite purpose. It means a place of meeting, a place of solemn assembly. These are all the various meanings of that word, moad. We'll come back here, but if you want to turn over a page or two to Numbers 1, verse 1, you'll see the same Hebrew word is used there at the tabernacle meeting. Tabernacle meeting is where God met with Moses, the leadership of Israel, to give them various instructions. Numbers 1, verse 1, the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tabernacle of meeting, as translated in New King James, on the first day of the second month. Now, the King James Version calls it the tabernacle of the congregation. Tabernacle. But either way, the word there is moad. It's a moad. Back to Leviticus 23. Read verse 2 again. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the feast of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocation, these are my feasts. That word, or term, Lord's feast or feast of the Lord, is used 12 times through this chapter. Clearly, it's a point that God wanted to get across to us. They're not our feast days. They're his. He established them. He calls us to them. But they are his days. 12 times you'll find that mentioned in Leviticus 23. I think that was, maybe he knew that Israel was hard-headed, right? And maybe we are too. So to get the point across, he just keeps repeating it and repeating it and repeating it. They're not our days. They belong to him. And thirdly, they're called holy convocations. Holy convocations. The word there is Kodesh, Kodesh Mikra. Now, I have mentioned this in the past. I'll refer you to, again, if you want to go into more detail on that, holy convocation. Mr. Brian Shaw gave an excellent Bible study in Snowshoe, West Virginia. I think it was 2017. I should know I was there, but the years kind of go. Really covers holy convocation in great detail. But these are called holy convocations, Kodesh Mikra. And it's important to know that because convocation is a word that's dropped out of our daily usage. We don't use the word convocating that frequently. About the only time I recall it coming around is around June, May, graduations, they have convocation ceremonies, right? Beyond that, you know, I don't call you up and say, hey, let's have a convocation, right? We don't, it's just not a word that we use. But here we're talking about holy convocations. We've looked at the word holy before many times. I won't cover that again. But convocation literally means, con means to and voke means to call. It means to call or to summons, right? It's different from the word congregation, because we're a congregation, right? Congregation literally means coming together, right? We come together for many things. It can literally mean to flock or to gather the flock is what congregate can literally be translated. Right now, we're a congregation. Tomorrow, some of us will be a congregation working outside. Still a congregation, still calling together of the flock. But the word convocation, or to convoke, is to call to an assembly. It's summoning the flock to a specific time and place for a purpose. It's convoking the congregation, if I want to put those two words together, calling them. So you and I could be in a congregation of a flock in the southwest pasture, and the shepherd would call the flock to the north pasture. That would be a convoking them, a convocation in the north pasture. And the word would get out, we got to go to the north pasture, because that's where he's summoned the flock. And so when God has a holy convocation, he is calling his people, he's summoning us to that time and place and location. And so that word, you'll see, is used in every one of his holy days. The word is used, holy convocation. And that's why we have holy day services on the holy days, because that's what God expects. And so as we go through this, I want you to think of a couple things, you know, in this idea of being a congregation that is called or summoned to a holy convocation. And that is, when we come to the holy days, God expects us to keep his holy days and to keep his days holy. Did you catch the difference? One is to keep the holy day, and the other one is to keep the day holy. Both is expected of his people when we come together on the holy days. You see, God learns a lot about us in our approach to each and every one of the holy days, every single one of them, beginning with this one that we're in right now, this holy convocation that he's called, which is the next verse, verse 3, 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath, a solemn rest, a what? Holy convocation. You shall do no work on it, it's the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. So this, which we observe each and every week, is a holy convocation. It is a convoking of the flock, a convoking of the congregation to come before God's throne. You know, I've often shared with you, you know, I have little mental images I think of from time to time. You know, when God calls us here, he's on his throne. We just don't see it. But he calls us here, he's on his throne, he's called his people together, and he's here. You know, and, you know, this is one of those things I know I've shared before. It's a picky little point. But when we do our opening prayer, we often have men say, we ask God's presence to be here. He is. It's his meeting. He called it. Like, he called us to be here. So, you know, it's a silly little thing, but I think about things like that. About, you know, God is here. We believe that. That's why we came here. He called the convocation. It's a holy convocation. The flock has come here, and we've gathered. And so we come here to honor him and to worship him, and we do that in prayer. We do that in song. We do that when we sing hymns, when special music is played to God on behalf of the congregation. And in our minds, we can give an amen to that. Or when an opening prayer or a closing prayer is given and we amen to that. We are worshiping and honoring God. And then in return, we also listen to God through the messages that are given. And that's typically during the opening prayer, somebody will make that statement, and it was made today, that you would open up our hearts and minds to understand what will be shared from God's word through the servants, the men that will be speaking. Right? It's not my words. One guy said once, I've always liked the saying, like, I'm just the mailman. Right? I don't write the mail, I just deliver it. Right? If the men are doing their job, they're just reading right from God's word. It's not, thus saith me, it's just, this is what God's word says. And so we need to keep that in mind, beginning, as it says in verse 3 of Leviticus 23, with the weekly Sabbath is a holy convocation. And so through the week, we should be giving thought to that as we approach the Sabbath, that we're not just showing up, because if that's all we're doing, then we're just attending the holy convocation as opposed to really being a part of it. Let's continue on. I want to certainly get to the fall holy days. I'm just going to kind of move through each of the holy days, Leviticus 23, beginning verse 4. Again, these are the feasts of the Lord, holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at their appointed times. 14th day of the first month is the Lord's Passover. The 15th day of the same month, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work. You shall offer an offering by fire to the Lord for 7 days. The seventh day shall be a holy convocation. That is why we have holy day services, a holy convocation on the first day of unleavened bread and on the last day of unleavened bread. Why do we do that? Because God said do it. You know, when I was coming in the church at age 10 and some of my friends were asking me why I did the things we did, it's like, well, because God said so. They probably thought it was a nut, and it probably was, but it's like, well, God says so. That's why we do it. That was about as deep as my understanding went as a 10-year-old. We did it because God says so. I thought that was a good answer, but they looked at me like, you know, as Mr. Hand said in the sermonette, when you're not doing sports on the Sabbath, and they're like, why? Because God said so. And they're like, okay, whatever. But the first day and the last day, again, are holy convocations. So that's the first month, right? The first month, the 15th day, and then 7 days later would be the 21st day. He goes on then in verses 9 through 14 to talk about the wave sheaf offering, which is used to signify how we begin counting for Pentecost. But it's not a holy convocation. It just sort of establishes that counting. But in beginning of verse 15, we'll see the Feast of Weeks or Pentecost. It says, you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day you brought the sheaf of the wave offering. Seven Sabbaths shall be counted. Count 50 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath. Then you shall offer a new grain offering to the Lord. I'll try to skip on down here just to move along. Go down to verse 21. You shall proclaim on the same day that it is a holy convocation to you. So there it is again. I know I'm being redundant, but every single one of the holy days, beginning with the weekly Sabbath, God says, is a holy convocation. It is a holy calling or gathering of his flock to his throne. So it's no small thing. It is a privilege. It's an honor to be here, that God has called us to be a part of his plan, which, again, I'm getting ahead of myself here a little bit. But again, this is an honor and a privilege. But here at Pentecost, if you just do the math, your Pentecost isn't, you know, this day of this month. You count 50 days, right? But if you're in the first month, around the 15th and 21st day, and you add 30 days or 50 days to that, right, count 50, you're going to end up in around the third month. So, you know, first and last day of unleavened bread are in the first month. Pentecost will fall in the third month. So again, these are spread across different months of the year. But the spring holy days, as we call them, points to that early spring harvest that we're a part of, that God has called some out of the world to be part of the first fruits. And those that have been called out of the world to be a part of that have a responsibility in this life to overcome several things. Probably the toughest one of all is ourselves, right? Human nature, you know, just overcoming our own passions and desires and things we want to do. Again, as was mentioned in the sermonette message, you may desire to do something on the Sabbath because you have a passion for that sport or activity, but you realize you can't. And when you don't, you've overcome that pressure, that temptation. The other thing we have to overcome, obviously, is the world and its evil influences and its attempts to draw us away and pull us out of the church to pursue evil. And we've looked at verses that cover that before. And, of course, our adversary, Satan, is something else we have to overcome. And see, also tries to influence us to make wrong choices. It's the fall holy days, though, as we call them, that picture of the events that we've been preparing for, looking forward to, and yearning to come about. And so I want to look at those now because, as I said, it's 33% of that 1 month, 10 out of the 30 days, part of a holy convocation. Now, all of the Feast of Tabernacles isn't, we understand that, but we're still going to be there at the feast. So let's begin in verse 23, Leviticus 23. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall have a Sabbath rest, a memorial of blowing trumpets. What? A holy convocation. There it is. And so here then, that's the Feast of Trumpets, a holy convocation, as it says in verse 24. That's next Sabbath. 1 week from today, it'll be the first day of the seventh month of the Hebrew calendar. That's September 19th of this year. Let's continue on then, verse 26. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, also the 10th day of the seventh month shall be the Day of Atonement. It shall be a holy convocation. Once again, it is God convoking his flock. We're expected to be there. This is what God expects of us. You shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire to the Lord, and you shall do no work on that same day, for it is a day of atonement, to make atonement for you before the Lord your God. And of course, I won't go into a lot of detail. We'll cover some of these things on those holy days. But, you know, we've covered this in the past. There's a real strong warning for the person that doesn't afflict a soul on that day. Next verse, 29, says, you're going to be cut off. That's some serious stuff right there, being cut off. And so, I always encourage people, you know, we're told to fast on that day. And obviously, I don't want to go off in a whole thing about health issues and all that, because there's reasons why some legitimately cannot. But that's a matter between you and God. I don't, you know, it's not for me to give you permission to fast or not fast. And God says fast. If you can't, that's between you and God. It's not really my place to say, oh yeah, that complies. That's between you and God. But, you know, there's a strong warning about the person that doesn't do that, being cut off. So it's something we should weigh seriously and think about. But again, the point being, it is a holy convocation. That'll be on the 10th day. So this year it's Monday, September 28th. Let's continue on, verse 33, Leviticus 23. Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of this seventh month again shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days to the Lord. On the first day, verse 35, there shall be a holy convocation. And so here we see that. That'll be the Sabbath of October 3rd. Sabbath of October 3rd, which probably actually begins at sunset the night before. So most feast sites will probably have a Friday evening service at sunset or just shortly after sunset. I encourage you to be there if you can. There's been 1 or 2 years, my wife and I, you know, it was one of those, well, you know, we got babies and we just got in town and so we didn't go. And we just felt horrible. Like we just missed something. There was like something that was referenced and referred to and commented on that we just missed because we weren't there. So again, you have to do your best, but I would encourage you if you can to be there on that Friday evening service. But the holy convocation will be on the Sabbath this year, October 3rd, will be the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles. Let's continue on. For 7 days, verse 36, you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. On the eighth day, the last great day, you shall have a holy convocation, and you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. So again, we'll come to the eighth day, the last great day. That'll be the following Sabbath, which is October 10th. So you add 8 days, right? You end up on the 22nd. It's still in the seventh month. So that's why I said the seventh month on the Hebrew calendar is 33% of the time will be before God in a holy convocation or at the feast between the two holy convocations. And so it's certainly something we should really be thinking and preparing ourselves for beyond just, okay, I've saved up my second tithe and I've got my housing arranged. It really requires much more effort on our part than that. So let's now look a little more specifically at the Feast of Tabernacles, because I know that's what takes probably the most amount of our physical preparation and planning. And this year it's been one of those, you're going here, then you're going there, then you're not going anywhere. Now you're going here. Wait, and somebody asked me today, like, you think they're going to change things again? I said, I don't know. It's like, just go with the flow is all I can tell you. I don't think so. I think things are pretty well set. But hey, we still got time, right? We still got time. Leviticus chapter 23 now in verse 39. I want to look at some more aspects of the Feast of Tabernacles. Also on this 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep the Feast of the Lord for 7 days. On the first day there shall be a Sabbath rest, and on the eighth day a Sabbath rest. Let's drop it down to verse 41. You shall keep it as a feast to the Lord for 7 days in the year. Now I emphasize that because the word keep is not used in Leviticus 23 for any one of the other holy days, only the Feast of Tabernacles. You can do a keyword search if you want to cut and paste that out of an ESOR and put it in a Word document and search for the word keep. You'll see it only shows up there in those two locations, verse 39 and in verse 41. The word for keep is hagag, and it literally means like walking in a solemn assembly, marching in a sacred procession. It has the symbolism of pilgrimage. And I think we understand what it means, pilgrimage. A quick dictionary search will point out that pilgrimage, I think this was Webster's, a journey, especially a long one, made to some sacred place as an act of religious devotion. The Feast of Tabernacles involves pilgrimage. That's why it says you shall keep that feast. And so that's when it becomes a challenge because, again, we know there are legitimate circumstances where some cannot. Now, again, I am not here to comment in that regard. Some people have legitimate reasons to not go. It's between them and God. It's not for me to judge. It's not for you to judge, right? We just read what God expects of us, and it's up to each one of us to respond, right? That's about all I can say on that. What we see here is the Feast of Tabernacles. It is a Kodesh Mikra. It's a holy convocation. God, who is holy, has convened his flock. He's summoned them to a time and a place. And it involves a pilgrimage. It's orderly, and it's a procession, and people travel to it to keep the feast. Now, the word here in verse 40 is sukkah. In fact, in verse 42, it says, "You shall dwell in booths," same word there, "for 7 days. Now, that word, again, is translated, it's sukkah, and it's translated booth, tabernacle, pavilion, tent. We apply it as a temporary dwelling. We all go to some temporary dwelling. Sometimes I've gone to temporary dwellings that were way nicer than my personal dwelling, right? Other times, many times, when I first came in the church as a child, we went to the feast and stayed in a tent, I think 4 years. Actually loved it. The whole campground was nothing but church people, right? So as a 10-year-old, 11, 12, we had a blast. Come home from services, change clothes, have lunch, and then you kind of went around the campground, dropping in on different campsites, bumming food off of people. It was actually not a bad gig, you know? It was fun as a kid. Some of my favorite memories of the feast were in a tent in Wisconsin Dells, strange as it may seem. But regardless of what it is, it's a temporary dwelling. At the end of it, we're going home. And we understand that, right? So it's not so much about the space, but it's really more about our attitude. The purpose for the temporary dwellings for Israel was to remind them that they were pilgrims. They lived in tents for 40 years, and it was to remind them of that, to being pilgrims and sojourners. And the same is true for us in a different way. We too are pilgrims and sojourners in this life. Life is temporary. And as we go to the Feast of Tabernacles and appreciate that it pictures the millennium, we're reminded that the life we're going to go back to, our life, it's all temporary. And so it helps to remind us that as we go and we stay in those temporary dwellings, we too are pilgrims, sojourners, seeking a homeland, a much better world than the world we're living in now. Now, over the years, I've personally witnessed both extremes as it comes to this particular point. I've known individuals that try to copy every literal physical thing that Israel was told to do. I know some people that say, you know, you must stay in a tent. You have to. It's required. God says it. Or you've got to have a sukkah. I knew somebody that actually ordered palm branches to be delivered to where they lived because they didn't grow where they lived. Because God said, you know, verse 40, the fruit of the beautiful trees, branches of the palm trees, boughs of leafy trees. So they ordered them, had them shipped to their house because that's what God required. It was, again, wrong perspective, right? Now, I also know people who like to stay in a tent. You know, I know people to this day that'll go find a campground to go to the feast. They enjoy that. Right? There's nothing wrong with that. It's when you think it's required, okay, that's just, you're missing the point, right? You're missing the point. So it's important that we remain balanced because, again, I've known people that even went so far as to build that sukkah in their backyard because that's what Israel did, and so that's what they are going to do. It's when we start getting into you must do this or you must do that, you're missing the big point, right? Our life is temporary. This whole life is temporary. It doesn't feel like it because it's all we've known, but that's the reality of it all. Notice Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews 11. Hebrews chapter 11, and we'll begin in verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, verse 9, he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, and heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. He goes on to talk about Sarah. Let's go on to verse 13. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return, but now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. To tie this into the sermonette message, they had no exit strategy. They were all in. They weren't looking back at their homeland. They were all in. Our life is temporary. And that's what we learn from going to the feast and staying in temporary dwellings. No matter how nice or maybe not nice, my wife and I have experienced both. We've checked into places where this is not nice at all. And then we find out there's no other rooms available. And it's like, okay, we'll just go and make the best of it. Right? Because it's temporary anyways. It's 10 days and we'll be back home. And then we've had other places that were very, very nice. That we were like, wow, how did we end up with this room? Go back down to the desk. Are you sure this is like the right room? Because that's a whole lot more than we're paying for. And oh yeah, it's the right room. It's like, okay, I'm not going to ask again. I asked twice and that's it. I'll keep my mouth shut. But we've had both. But it's all temporary. Our life is temporary. And that's the important message of leaving our homes for the feast and staying in something temporary. It just helps to remind us of that. So again, it's nothing wrong with staying in a tent if that's what you want to do. There's nothing wrong with staying in a really nice hotel if that's what you can afford and that's what you want to do, as long as we understand the principle. Now, I've seen the flip side too, though, where there's some that would refuse to stay in a tent. You know, what if the only feast site we could have, like, okay, we've pulled it off, we've got this place, we're going to use the Columbus Church building, but everybody's got to bring a tent. How many people would go, oh, no, that's not going to work. Because I've seen that attitude too, right? I mean, that's the other extreme. I think after this show, the year, though, it's been kind of good for us because maybe if that would have been the end result, maybe we would have said, you know what, fine, I'll do it. So maybe we've learned a little bit through this that if we'd have had nothing and that was the only thing that they could work out, I wonder how many more people would have said, oh, okay, I'm in. I'd rather be there in a tent than not be there at all. Again, I've seen all of it growing up in the church. You know, we attend the festivals to learn more about God and his purpose, but he also learns a lot about us in our preparation and our approach and our willingness to deal with whatever comes our way. We don't go there just to play and recreate. It's wonderful if you can go to nice feast sites and you have the ability to do that, but it's not purely vacation time. Right, I remember my days in the corporate world. I had to use my vacation time, as they called it, to go to the feast. But I also knew that the feast wasn't just a vacation. Right, it really is about God first, being in services, and making that a priority. Where I went was certainly a blessing at times, not so much a blessing at other times. I won't make anybody raise their hand. I was at the feast in 1980 in downtown Detroit. Not particularly a millennial setting. Just saying, okay? Never has been. People still went, you know? We had people willing to go there to serve and to make sure the feast could happen. I don't remember what the attendance was, but everybody stayed about an hour away because, you know, downtown Detroit's not a safe place to be staying unless you could afford to stay in the Renaissance Hotel at the time, which back in 1980, I think back then was 140 or 150 a night, right? So most people stayed out and drove about an hour to get to services. I don't know who decided that downtown Detroit was a good spot for the feast site, but, you know, people went, right? What if all we had was downtown Detroit? Would we go? Again, I mean, it's just a good way to kind of examine yourself. Would I go? I mean, now there's one thing to say, I wouldn't want to go. But would I go, right? Because again, it's been an interesting year. It's been a good year for us to kind of assess ourselves. You know, God's placed his name at various sites this year, and then he unplaced his name. Nope, we're not going to Steamboat. We're going to Utah. I may have shared with you already, I've been trying to go to Steamboat Springs for 5 years. I even agreed to be the coordinator this year just to go. And God said, it ain't happening, pal. You're not going. Stop trying to go to Colorado. I'm shutting it down. So I don't know what next year is going to bring. But it didn't work out, so it moved someplace else. So I know many of you that were going to Colorado are going off to Utah now. We're going to go down to Gatlinburg. You know, we go where the door opens up, and that's where God's people are going to gather. And so part of attending the feast, going there, as I said, is for God, for us to learn more about God, but for him also to learn about us. And that brings me to what I want to talk about now. our attitudes. Our attitudes, right? I had a rough week, I'll just flat out tell you. I had to deal with my share of mask comments and emails and phone calls and watching social media posts and people ripping about the church's decisions on this or that or the other thing. And let me ask you a question. I've asked myself this question this week as well. What is our attitude? Is our attitude ready for the fall holy days, especially this year? Especially this year. We really need to think about this and be honest with ourselves, right? Is our attitude ready for the fall holy days? It's been a difficult year. So I want to have a little bit of a straight talk about our attitudes. You know, should you go? Should you stay home? Are those that are going judging those that are not going? I hope that's not the case. It's not my place to judge anybody, right? God is the judge, right? And he knows the heart of every single one of us, every one of us. Because you could go to the feast with a wrong attitude and you're out with God, right? You could stay home with a wrong attitude and you're out, right? But again, God knows the heart of every individual. It's a challenging time for people to make decisions. I'll just share my thinking, and I don't mean this to pressure anybody, but I don't have the same challenges as some people, but my view along has simply been this, in light of COVID. I could go to the feast, get COVID, and die. I could go to the feast and get COVID and live. I could go to the feast and die from something else. I could go to the feast and nothing happened. For me, I'm going to the feast, because at the end of the day, I'm going to go to the feast, right? But that's not to judge anybody else's decisions, because I also recognize I don't have some of the same challenges that other people have. I remember years ago in our area, we had somebody that couldn't go to the feast. You know why? They were in the hospital. Hospital wouldn't release them. Am I going to judge them? Okay, we're going to have a hospital break here, midnight, 7 of us, we're going to show up. Right, break them out of the hospital to take them to the feast, right? So it's not for us to judge anybody else, just yourself and your attitude. And again, whether you're going or not going, that's between you and God. Because like I said, you could go for the wrong reasons too, right? Because, oh yeah, I'm going this year because, you know, I've got a 5-star hotel and I'm going to Jamaica or something like that. And then all of a sudden Jamaica's canceled and all of a sudden, no, I'm not going. Okay, so you could be going again, for wrong motives reasons. So that's not what I'm saying. Again, God understands the circumstances for everybody. I think I made that point clear. I'm not here to judge, and none of us should be, right? So I hope we're clear on that. Now, that being said, I want to look at John 7, because this is why I have the approach I have, and it's just me. John 7, verse 1. We have an example here of Jesus Christ, whose life was in danger. After these things, verse 1 of chapter 7 of the book of John, Jesus walked in Galilee, for he did not want to walk in Judea because the Jews sought to kill him. Okay, maybe I don't want to go to the feast because, you know, people are going to kill me. Seems like a good reason, right? And so that's what we see there in verse 1. Let's drop down to verse 6. I'll just jump ahead a little bit. He said to them, my time is not yet come, but your time is always ready. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify of it that its works are evil. You go up to the feast. I'm not yet going up to this feast, for my time has not yet fully come. And when he had said these things to them, he remained in Galilee. But when his brothers had gone up, then he also went up to the feast. Not openly, but as it were in secret. And later on, you'll see that he even went to the point of standing up in the temple and speaking. Me personally, that's just me. I'm like, well, they were going to kill him. That's a pretty good reason not to go. But he went. And so I've not had to face that in my life, right? Again, the individual who's in a hospital bed who would, you know, maybe not be released, that's a different scenario. I'm not judging that at all. I just have to make decisions for my own life. That's the only person I can make decisions for. He went. And then, as it said, he actually got up and he taught. Verse 14 says that in the middle of the feast, he went up to the temple and taught. We know in Zechariah 14, a familiar passage, that those that don't keep the feast in the millennium, there will be punishment for them. We won't bother turning there. But it's a familiar verse, right? They won't have rain. And so there's consequences. And so it's important that we're really, really sure. And it's not just an offhanded decision. And so I tend to believe when people have to make that decision to not go, I try to give them the benefit of the doubt that they've waited all out, and I leave that to them. That's all that we can do. And so again, I hope we're not in any way going to judge one way or the other. Okay? Now, what's our attitude going to be once we get there? What is our attitude going to be once we get there? If you're going to give grief or attitude, pick the word you want, to the door greeter, the person taking your temperature, the person who reminds you to put a mask on, if you're going to do that, stay home. I mean, honestly, just stop, please. Somebody is going to be, I use the term voluntold. Okay, you're the guy that needs to remind people of the mask. Oh, no, I'm not going to be that guy. Somebody's got to do it, right? Don't give them attitude or her. Somebody may have to take your temperature. Come on, please. They want to have a good feast too. They don't want your attitude. They don't want my attitude. It doesn't matter what I think about masks or temperature. It doesn't matter. We've been asked to comply. Go back and revisit the sermon on God or government, right? Just go read it again or listen to it again. We've been asked to do something. And whoever that person is volunteered, they don't want to hear any of us smarting off at them about any of it. They want to have a good feast too. Can we help them out? And just, if you can't, don't go. Like, because your attitude is wrong and you're already out of favor with God because you've got a rotten attitude. So why ruin it for somebody else? Get our attitudes right. We don't need to have these debates at the feast. I certainly don't want to have them. I've been asked to oversee the whole auditorium, which I realized after I said yes. It's like, oh, that's right. I'm a guy that everybody's going to come to now, which is fine. Well, I guess it's sad for them because you guys know where I stand on this right now. Like, I don't want to hear it, right? But my appeal to all of us is we're going to a holy convocation. Everybody wants to rejoice at the feast. Let's not bring attitude there. Let's just comply. And if you can't, stay in your room, right? I don't know how else to say that. Because again, if we're going to have attitude when we're there, then we're already out of favor with God. So staying home isn't going to make it any worse because you're already not in God's favor by having that attitude. So let's not make everybody else miserable. So let's now then talk about what God wants us to do at the feast, right? Rejoice. He wants us to rejoice at the feast. We have got to put all this behind us when we get to the feast. It's going to be hard, right? You're going to go in there and people will have masks on. You'll be immediately reminded, or you'll be reminded to put your mask on. So we can't just ignore what we're living. But we're living it, and we all know it. But we can go there and not talk about it all the time. We could talk about positive things and the day when all this will be behind us, and we could talk about Jesus Christ's return, what the millennium is going to be like, and what color masks we'll be wearing in the millennium, right? Because, oh, you didn't know that? No, I'm teasing. Would you sign off right now? Like, okay, forget it. I didn't know that. But right, we can talk about positive things. We want to rejoice. And that person that's going to check your temperature possibly or whatever, they want to rejoice too, right? So I just help them out, right? Just comply and move along and don't give them grief because they also want to enjoy the feast as well. You could put in your notes Deuteronomy 12, verse 17 to 19. Again, we're familiar with this. We take our second tithe, we go where God places his name, and we rejoice. That is what we're to go there for. And we can all help everybody rejoice by not making this stuff an issue. Next week will be a good test, right? Because we're all going to be together and, you know, and I'll be sending out an email this week reminding everybody we're not talking about it at the door, right? Masks on, temperatures, that's what we're doing, right? But it'll be on a much bigger scale when we get to the feast. Secondly, let's remember that the feast is a family affair. It's and not just your physical family, your spiritual family, right? We want everybody to enjoy the feast. And so be mindful of those that may be all alone. I've shared this story before. My wife and I met a young lady who was in a congregation out way out west. I don't remember exactly where. Her congregation consisted of her and a widow in their city, in her town. The nearest congregation, I think she said, was like 8 or 9 hours away. So in the Feast of Tabernacles there, we were at the Dells that year. She was there when the doors opened. She was also the last one going out when they locked the doors. And she made every minute of every day, she took advantage of that to fellowship. So again, keep in mind there'll be people like that. So as you're planning activities, and certainly it's a wonderful blessing when you've got an extended family that you can keep the feast with, but also look for those that maybe don't have that. Invite them to be a part of your family. Go spend a day with you and do things. And again, make sure everybody in this, our spiritual family, is rejoicing at the feast. Remember again, Deuteronomy 14, that we are there to learn to fear God. And that's a word that we've looked at in the past. To have all reverence and respect, to revere God. Deuteronomy 14, verse 22. Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 22. You shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year. You shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide. The tithe of your grain and your new wine and your oil and the firstborn of your herds and your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. To revere him, to have awe and respect for our God. The God that called you out of this world, out of blindness and deception, into truth. And so we go there, and we want to honor him and revere him. The Kyle and Dillett's commentary says, the true meaning, therefore, is that Israel might rejoice with holy reverence in the fellowship of its God. So then what are some very practical ways you and I can make this happen? To show respect to God, to one another, to do so, and to rejoice with holy reverence. So here comes some very practical things as we begin to wind down. Number one, be on time for services. Show your respect to God, to the brethren. You know, the last thing you want to be doing, is services are started and they're sitting down and all of a sudden you're tripping over people trying to get to a seat. You know, try to be on time. That being said, if something happens and you're delayed, you get a flat tire, don't not go just because you're late, but do your part to try to be there on time and be ready when services begin. Secondly, show God you can be submissive. This ties into what I've already covered, right? Show God we can be submissive. God is looking for people that are going to do what they're told. Right? Ultimately, that's what our life's going to be for eternity. He will be telling us what to do. And he wants to make sure that we'll be responsive in that regard. Again, we're not there to be bantering back and forth about, I don't think this is right or that is right or church is wrong with it. Just stop. Again, stop. Right? That's not what the feast is for. So if you're asked to park in a spot, just say yes and park in that spot. You may wonder why. It's okay. You can wonder. It doesn't make sense to me, but that's what they asked me to do. I'm just going to do it. So again, we need to show God that we can be submissive. Again, I've already covered, we go where God chooses. We don't just decide for ourselves. But the other flip side about all this, too, is showing we can be submissive. It's also showing that we're willing and able and again, having a heart to serve. As I said, somebody's going to be voluntold to do some jobs that aren't going to be the most favorable jobs out there. You could volunteer to do that job too, right? So there's plenty of opportunities to serve wherever you're going for the feast. Take an opportunity to do that. God is looking for us to have true love towards the brethren, to love God with our heart, to be willing to serve one another. That's what he's looking for. The feast is a great opportunity to do all of that. As we'll be there and we'll have opportunities to serve. And that means you'll be inconvenienced from time to time. Okay? You got to get there a little early. I may have to be hauling our keyboard there. I was trying to get out of taking my trailer this year, but I'm down to just a keyboard. They need a keyboard. I said, well, I could probably make that happen. Okay, if that's, they asked me to do that, I'll find a way to do that. You may be called upon to do things. You know, try to serve in some capacity at the feast. I can tell you in my years of being a coordinator, it's getting harder and harder and harder to find people willing to serve. Nobody wants to. Right? They want to go, and again, I get that, right? Life gets tough, gets stressful. You want a break, and people want to go to the feast and just have a break. I get that. But somebody needs to serve. May as well be you, right? So Be sure to set aside time to pray and study at the feast. Please don't forget that as well. You know, sometimes we get busy. We get our activity schedules planned. We've got lunch with this person, dinner with that person. Then we get home and I'm tired, so I'll pray in the morning and I'll study in the morning. And then you wake up, you're still tired and you're moving like a sloth. Because it's like, and then, right? So I'll do it when I get home this evening because I got nothing on my schedule. And then at church, you fill up your schedule. So, you know, please carve out that time. Make it happen. Don't forget about that. So again, if you're struggling with any of these points, being on time, being submissive, being willing to serve, having an attitude problem, you really have to assess whether you should be there. Certainly an attitude problem, right? I hope and pray. You know, as I share my thoughts, let me just also say, I haven't been getting grief from you. In case you're wondering, it's not coming from here, so thank you very much. But it's a message I feel needs to get out there, and we can do our part. Wherever you're going for the feast, you be the example, right? When the guy next to you is going haywire over a mask, you know, maybe you can just calm him down, right? So let's just be a good example in that regards. And lastly, again, fellowship as much as you possibly can. Right? There are people out there that desperately need fellowship. Take advantage of the time. Get to know brethren. Encourage them. It's been a tough year for everybody, not just you. Right? It's been a tough year for everybody. We all need encouragement. Right? We don't know when this is going to end. So we're going to go to the feast. And we're going to come home. So everybody needs to be encouraged and uplifted, right? And ready to just move on. Because we don't know what's going to happen another month from now. So again, let's make sure that we do that. Again, a couple things that we wrap up. Again, watch your diet, get a lot of rest. Right? These are critical things to remember at the feast. One of the things that I've always, and you ask any one of the elders here, you know, when the anointing schedule comes out, what's the first thing you do? Am I at the beginning of the feast or the end of the feast? If I'm at the end of the feast, I'm probably going to get busy. Because people get wore out, they've been out late too much, they've had probably more than their fair share of rich foods, and more people tend to get sick towards the end of the feast. This would also be a good year, like, you know, don't show up at the feast to be anointed because you think you have the flu, right? No, like if you feel sick, you know, there'll be a phone number to call, don't show up and ask to be anointed, right? Again, of all years, and we say this every year, this would probably be the one year more than any to be very mindful of that. So as we wrap up then, are you ready to keep the feast? Physically, spiritually, again, in light of these last 6 months, is your attitude right? Are you ready? Are you really ready for the feast? It's something we can think about in the week ahead. Next Sabbath, we'll begin the fall holy day cycle, right? Next Sabbath will be the Feast of Trumpets. That'll be the first of the holy days in the fall cycle. The last thing we need is for people who call themselves the chosen of God to have attitude problems that do not represent the very kingdom they claim to be part of. That's the last thing we need. So let's make sure that, you know, we're all ready, that we've taken time, that no matter what we think or feel about any of this, that we are ready, beginning with trumpets, on into atonement, and certainly when we get to the Feast of Tabernacles, whatever we're asked to do, we simply do it and be an example to others that it's not for me to decide if it's a good idea or a bad idea. It's just they've asked us to do that, and that's what we're going to do. So let's again then show God how much we desire to be part of his plan by being ready to keep the feasts of the Lord physically, spiritually, and emotionally.